Election Day is now just 3 months away. If the election were held today, based on the polls, Joe Biden would win. But it's not being held today, and 3 months is a long time in politics. Remember 2016, just days before that election, FBI Director James Comey sent a letter to Congress announcing the reopening of the Hillary Clinton email probe. And that was not the first so-called October surprise in our nation's history. Joining us now is Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Julian, first of all, where does this phrase come from, the October surprise?
Well, the term was really popularized in 1980. William Casey, who was part of Ronald Reagan's presidential campaign, future CIA director, he talks about an October surprise, and he was referring to the possibility that President Jimmy Carter was going to announce some resolution to the Iran hostage crisis right before the election. And that's when the term really comes into popular usage.
And I mentioned the Comey announcement just before the 2016 election. Give us a little bit of the context for that. And do you think, looking back now, that it had an effect on the outcome of the election?
That's one of the big ones. The FBI had been conducting an investigation into a private email server of Hillary Clinton, who was running against Donald Trump. Comey had announced in July that the investigation was over and they hadn't found anything to bring charges. But then in late October, October 28th, Comey announces that the investigation is still open and they're looking into new emails from the computer of Anthony Weiner, former congressman. And it turns the media's attention back to the Hillary Clinton scandal. And many analysts, like the 538 website of Nate Silver, argued that it does give a bump to Donald Trump that was significant in states like Michigan and Pennsylvania, where Donald Trump ended up winning by a very small percentage. So this is one of the handful that might actually have mattered.
There was also an October surprise in 1972 when Secretary of State Henry Kissinger said this about the controversial Vietnam War.
We believe that peace is at hand. We believe that an agreement is within sight.
This was just days before the election. What was the importance and significance of that?
Well, Richard Nixon, as a candidate in 68, had promised to end the war in Vietnam. He had not ended the war in Vietnam in 1972. And on October 8th, there was a breakthrough where the North Vietnamese had agreed to terms set out by the U.S. in Paris peace negotiations. But between that and the time that Kissinger holds the press conference, the deal had totally collapsed already. But Kissinger still makes that promise, and he wants to show that President Nixon is delivering and he's bringing or about to bring a resolution to the biggest foreign policy crisis of the time, one that consumed the nation. But it turned out not to be true, and by December, the negotiations had fallen apart. Nixon wins, but he wins even without that promise.
You know, these are October surprises that are being driven by the candidates or people close to them. There are also October surprises that have nothing to do with people, like you could call Hurricane Sandy back in 2012, which happened around Halloween, right before the election in 2012, an October surprise.
Sure. The natural disaster affects some of the swing states involved in that election, like New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, is also affected. President Obama, as a result of this, has a moment to be very presidential going into the election. And the most famous moment comes when he and the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, have a joint appearance, which angers fellow Republicans who don't understand why Christie's doing this. But it helps give an aura about what kind of President Obama is. Again, as with all October surprises, it's unclear this turns the election in any way, but it certainly ends up benefiting the political standing of Obama because of how he responds and because of that moment with Governor Christie.
It helps Christie too.
No, absolutely. and it does help Christie, whose legacy since then, though, has been tarnished and known more for his role in Bridgegate than his role in helping the recovery from Hurricane Sandy.
So as you look forward to this November, there was a New York Times story the other day about the possibility that the Trump administration is going to be able to announce a COVID-19 vaccine as an October surprise, that there are memos going around saying October is when we need this vaccine to come. What are you going to be watching for?
Well, there's a difference between needing it and being able to produce it. So obviously, if there's an announcement of a vaccine that works, that's viable, that can be mass produced in the spring, and that comes out in October, that could have an effect in diminishing some of the gap we're seeing between Joe Biden and Trump in many states. This is the central issue of our time. This is our Vietnam. On the other hand, if this is a announcement that's rushed for political purposes and there isn't a vaccine or there's an unsafe vaccine, that would add to much of the controversy that surrounds President Trump's term in office.
That is Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. His new book is called Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker and the Rise of the New Republican Party. You can hear our conversation about that, by the way, at hereandnow.org. Julian, thanks as always.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, and on the issue of October surprises, the press, of course, plays a big role in those. So let's bring in NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik to talk about how the media should cover the events leading up to the election, especially those in the final days. Hi, David.
Hey, Jeremy.
So there are so many big picture, long-term things going on right now. Obviously, COVID-19, the economic situation as a result of COVID-19, the protests over racial injustice, all those are going on and all those help shape people's views. So what should the media do as it determines how much weight to give anything that happens in the month of October?
Well, we shouldn't be surprised to think that if something bubbles up, that the press would swing its attention to it for two reasons. One, the definition of news includes the word new, right? And second, I always remember what former head of CNN, U.S. Mark Whitaker, once said to me. He said, you know, in looking at how major news organizations cover things, it's a little bit like watching 5-6-year-olds play soccer. They all just rush to wherever the ball is and focus on it as though it's the only thing there. I think a lot of weight has to be given to what the actual facts are, how immediately proximate it is to Election Day. You know, if it comes from the administration, as you just heard from your previous segment, something coming from the Nixon administration just before the election there, you know, sadly, the Trump administration no longer has the benefit of the doubt on credibility. So I think things have to be tested closely. Things have to be scrutinized. Things can't be taken at face value. And that's going to require rigor on both sides, but nonetheless on rigor, particularly of things coming out of the White House if it happens in just a couple days or weeks before the election. This is a time of intense scrutiny, and that's going to be both in terms of what coverage we give, but also in terms of how much coverage the media gives to things. I think there has to be perspective.
But will there be, David? Because I'm thinking if President Trump comes out within days of the election and issues some huge executive order that feels very historic, which he has done in the past, wouldn't the media be obligated to cover that even if they don't have time to fact check that in real time?
Well, I was with you until that last little codicil there. I think we are, you know, being asked to do something at times that is seemingly almost impossible, which is to say fact check things in real time. I think it is worth saying to people what we know and don't know. If we don't know whether the president has authority to do something, as has come up as recently as the last couple of days, we have to lead with that. We have to be very clear about that. We have to say whether or not there's any information on which they're basing their claims. We have to say whether or not there's anything that would seem to cut against it. And again, if there is, I think you have to say the president has support for his argument in such and such ways. And we don't know that this is only coming from the president, but you know, there's a lot of signaling that, for example, we're going to hear from the Justice Department about a report being done by a U.S. attorney ordered by Attorney General Barr of whether or not certain kinds of reviews of the president and his campaign's conduct toward Russia was proper. And there's a lot of belief that the attorney general may try to put his thumb on the scales. So I think this is a moment of real – the press has to step up. Yeah, this is chess. We've got to be able to present things in real time and fact check or present what we don't know in real time rather than just relaying information.
David, there was a lot of criticism of the media in 2016 for going live to President Trump's rallies and giving him a lot of free airtime. Now some believe that that is happening again, except instead of rallies, it's these daily press briefings. Just yesterday, he used the platform, he was on a number of cable networks, to cast doubt on the security of mail-in ballots. Listen.
You don't have to look at signatures. You don't have to approve anything. You can have double mailings. You can have all sorts of things. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. It's a disgrace. I mean, honestly, it's a disgrace.
David, there's little evidence for widespread ballot fraud, but a lot of people heard that live last night. Should the media cover these events every day?
Well, I've been an advocate of the idea of presenting them perhaps in full, but not necessarily live. So you can tape and you can examine, have the chance to bring some scrutiny and fact checking to it, and then stop the tape when the president's talking, and either with captions or with announcers say, you know, here are ways in which that isn't the case. Chris Wallace did, I thought, an awfully effective job on a number of occasions with that, with his interview not so many days ago with the president.
And Jonathan Swan just now on Axios. Fabulous. Although it was interesting to see both of those journalists be very tough with the president, and the president allowed them to do that and didn't say things like "that's a nasty question" or "get up and leave," which, you know, one, he has certainly done that with a lot of female reporters in the White House press corps. I want to just ask our listeners, if you have thoughts about this, please go to hereandnow.org. And we're going to continue this conversation with NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. David, thank you.
You bet.